to I'm Spiritual, Dammit. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me today, I'm so excited, one of my favorite authors that actually got me started down this path, Neil Donald Walsh, author of 29 books. Neil, have I forgotten one, or are we still at 29?
Well, the actual count isn't important. It's 33, but...
Okay, but who's counting? Your website needs to be updated, just so you know.
See, I don't even count.
Yeah, several films under your belt, and the 9 Conversation with God books are what got me started and dipping my toe into this pond, as they say, Neil. When I picked up Conversations with God, your first book in 1997, I know it came out in 95, so I was a little late to the party, I apologize, but I... It really, what changed for me, and I know you hear this all the time, and I hope you don't get tired of hearing it, because I love telling the story to people. I switched the way I speak of things when it comes to manifestations. Instead of saying, I want and I need, which, as you wrote, creates more want and more need. The universe is just answering your statement. I want more money. I need a better job. Well, here you go. More lack coming your way. But if you...
Because there's only one word in God's vocabulary. God always says yes. So if you're walking around saying, I want more money, God says yes. That's true.
Yeah. Yes, you do. Here's your truth. Exactly.
I want a better relationship. Yes.
Yes, you do.
People ask me, you know, so if I always say to people, if you understand that God has only one word in her vocabulary, mm-hmm. you'll start speaking to him in an entirely different way. You'll start to say, my perfect relationship is coming to me now. Right. All the money that I need is coming to me now.
Yes.
And even then, you'll move into a place of gratitude. Because gratitude is a powerful, powerful device. Thank you, God, for sending me exactly what I need at this moment. And suddenly, your statements, your prayers, your conversations with God, as you've just said, take mm-hmm. on an entirely different vocabulary.
It shifts all the energy. And for me, it was thank you in advance for. And I started small, Neil, with parking spaces, because I couldn't understand and wrap my head around, you know, thanking the universe or, being grateful for all that I wanted and needed actually being right in front of me. I started with baby steps and thanking the universe for parking spaces. And I can tell you, I started keeping a journal in my car, in my little Nissan, writing down as often as it would happen. I would get rock star parking wherever I needed it, even off of Michigan Avenue here in Chicago, which is almost impossible. I would find one space. It was unbelievable. And I've still been keeping that log, and I have still been finding, you know, parking spaces. But gratefully and thankfully, it has expanded into other things. It doesn't just have to be the parking space, but I always tell people, start with something that you can truly believe and embrace, because that energy is important. The belief of your statement is important. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, not only would I agree with that, but mm-hmm. I'm going to add a little nuance to what you've just offered.
Please.
And that is, in my world, I also coach people not only to choose something they can believe, mm-hmm. but something that makes very little difference. Because, and then I move from that to larger statements of gratitude to the universe. Mm-hmm. I say, if you remove the need for anything to occur, excuse me, mm-hmm. if you remove the need for anything in particular to happen, mm-hmm. you remove the expectation that you're only successful if such and such occurs. The parking space shows up, the increased salary manifests, the perfect relationship comes right around the corner. When you don't need those things, when you don't require those things, when you just think of them as almost as trivial as parking spaces, mm-hmm. okay, it would be nice if I found a parking space, but the world isn't going to end if I don't. I'll park a few blocks away and walk over. So suddenly we begin to recontextualize the very nature of the requests that we make of the universe. Mm-hmm. You put them in a different category. You put them in a category called, it's okay if it is, and it's okay if it isn't. This God or something better. Mm-hmm. And that removes the energy signature that we used to hold around the requests that we make of the universe. Changes everything dramatically.
Don't you feel, Neil, if you get an email from somebody that has so much want and need and angst in their field, right? Just in their presence of, I need to be validated or I won't be okay. I need my boss to like me or else life is not going to be all right. All those things. Sometimes when I get even an email from somebody that's like that, I can feel it just when I read their email. Does that ever happen to you?
Yes, of course. If you think you can feel it, what do you think God feels?
I know. Yes, exactly. But as you write about many times over, we all are a part of God. We all know everything we need to know, but we just can't access it all. And that was such a big thing for me to understand that we have the ability to have God's power and knowledge at any time. It is always at our access. And what we do in this world of ours is we offload all of our power. We give up our power to other forces, to a religion, to a boss, to a mom, to a spouse, whatever it is. And we forget we have the access to that source all the time within us.
Yes. And the beauty and the wonder of conversations with God, just by the very title of the books, is that they threw open the door to that sense of accessibility and allowed people to know that the average person actually can have their own conversation with God.
I'm holding in my hands, Neil, God's message to the world. You've got me all wrong, is the little post-it that God wrote and tabbed right onto the globe here. This really, really resonated for me. I have been on the spiritual journey since my father passed away from a brain tumor in 2001 at the age of 56. And what I have always found fascinating is our misunderstanding, I think, of what God is all about and religion and how we've messed it up. And as you mentioned in this book so profoundly, that, you know, we as a species, we can embrace medical advances and science and all of these other things. You know, we used to think it was okay to smoke, people, in airplanes. I mean, it's just unbelievable. We can advance in these knowledges, but we are absolutely hell-bent on not advancing on our belief systems of how the Bible was put together and how religions came to be and who God is. What is it going to take, other than wonderful books like yours, Neil, to help us kind of reroute that ship, if it's possible?
Well, see, the problem is humanity needs to be able to depend on something.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're really talking about. All the rugs, to be fair to the human race, all the rugs are being pulled out from under us.
Yeah.
The stuff that we thought was true turns out to be not true. I mean, even scientifically, the things that we thought were so turn out to be not so. The pillars of our society, in virtually every way, everywhere we turn, are crumbling and falling apart. So we don't have any floor anymore. Everything's been pulled out from under us, and so there's very little to depend on.
Mm-hmm.
And as the changes come more frequently and more dramatically, changes in lifestyle, changes in the whole experience of humanity on the earth, as those changes increase with increase in their rapidity and in the quality of what they're offering to human beings and what they're changing, we find ourselves reaching, almost in some cases desperately reaching, can something not change? Can something be dependable? Can we rely on something being the same now as it was 100 years ago or even 1,000 years ago? Is there anything at all that's static and stable? And that is what's driving the increased reliance on and insistence by people who are belonging to certain spiritual communities to insist that the doctrines and the scriptures upon which their community is based are inviolable and cannot be changed. They're inviolable. We don't alter. We don't mess with that. That's the one thing. You know what? And people start putting their feet down and say, no, we're not changing that. So now what it would take to answer your question directly, I wanted to explain why, you know, what's causing that.
Yes.
In an era of incredible change, rapid change, and dramatic change, people are looking for something to rely on and depend on. Now, the way to correct that, as I see it, is to allow people to see clearly that these things, these insistences, these ideas that we've brought forward from really hundreds and thousands of years ago are no longer serving humanity and probably never really have served humanity. We're beginning to see a little bit of that now.
Mm-hmm.
As we begin to see somewhat less willingness on the part of people to simply swallow whole the doctrines and dogmas of various political philosophies as well as religious philosophies and religious movements and religions themselves. So as we begin to take a look at, wait a minute, is this serving us? And as we begin to decide that some of these ideas are no longer functional, then we will see those changes. So what it will take is what's put into place now, mass communication, the ability to communicate with each other very, very rapidly. The Internet has given us that opportunity now. With a click of a mouse, we can send messages all over the world, from here to China and Moscow and back, instantaneously. The Internet now will even translate it for us into five or six different languages. So we don't even have a language barrier in many cases anymore. So that I think this great change is coming. I think we're about 8 to 10, 15 years on the outside. Mm-hmm. That's probably a longer view, away from some of the major shifts and changes that need and are, that really want to emerge, that need to take place on the Earth before we just walk into this box canyon and into a stone wall and discover through sad experience that we can't keep going forward in the same direction any longer. An example of that would be, in fact, the books I've written. You understand that 25 or 30 years ago, to say nothing of back in the 40s and 50s, which seems like ancient history to some people, but I recall those days in my life. Mm-hmm. Those are very real times in my life. And back in 1953, a book called Conversations with God not only would not have been read, it would not have been published, my dear.
Oh, well, yes. Even Edgar Cayce was coming out, and everybody was thinking he was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And, you know, unfortunately, for decades, as you write about, for thousands of years, every major divine message that has ever been documented in any religion comes from source to a human. A human is always the relayer of the message, right? And so for us to think that that stopped at Jesus or stopped it with Muhammad or stopped with Moses or stopped with whoever is just silly. And I speak about this quite a bit, as you know, from doing all the research that you've done on religious studies throughout the years with your writing. The Bible was not chiseled onto templates until decades after Jesus died. So for us to think that what fell out of the sky, you know, my grandmother really literally thought the Lutheran Bible fell out of the sky in its written form. And I know a lot of people who believe that. I get in arguments with a lot of Christians who say Jesus was Christian. I'm like, no, he was a Jewish carpenter, people. I mean, they just don't do their history. They don't know how these stories came together. And then the error possibilities of those years and years and years of translations, that we are getting ideas and parables and, you know, an essence. And I spoke with a Lutheran minister recently who talks very openly about the Bible and spirituality in the Bible. And, you know, people like to pick and choose. Well, if you go to a medium, then you should be stoned to death. That's the devil. Well, you know what? Leviticus says you have to stone to death adulterers as well. So we're just picking and choosing our arguments.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's Deuteronomy says that if your children disobey you, you should take them to the town gates and stone them to death.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Thank you for that reminder. So, yeah. You know, if we haven't evolved from this, and of course, you know, not to mention all the other things that it talks about with, you know, you have to love thy neighbor and oh, like you say, the children disobeying and homosexuality and all these other things. I mean, there are so many translations into everybody's agenda that seem to be just, quote, okay. Oh, never mind the major testament thou shalt not kill. Hello. But it's okay if you kill in war against ISIS, but otherwise, thou shalt not kill. I mean, don't you think we have just totally messed up every major message of every major religion over decades and decades of agenda and ego?
The challenge that we're facing, the answer to your question is yes. Mm-hmm. The challenge from my point of view, but the challenge we're facing is that we have not placed before humanity, no one is placing before humanity, an alternative set of principles, spiritual guidelines, if you please, upon which we can agree. And that's the see nature just hates a void. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see nothing there. So if someone came up with a next set of understandings and awarenesses about the universe that could replace the old story, a new cultural story for humanity, we would stand a greater chance. Of replacing that old story, but we are loath to find ourselves with no story at all. Mm-hmm. So our job as people in this particular time and place is to encourage humanity to create and to write a new cultural story so that one every bit as riveting and every bit as dramatic as the stories of old, as the story of Moses and the Red Sea parting and Jesus and the crucifixion and the Buddha chronicle and all of the stories of all the great religions of the world, the travels of Muhammad and all the rest. Those are all very dramatic stories, compelling stories, and those compelling narratives have not been replaced. My friend Barbara Marx Hubbard says the world will change when we create a new story as compelling as the ones that have driven the narrative up to this point.
Right. And I think this new coming is a lot of these people who have had near-death experiences that are in the medical community, because it's sort of blowing the minds of those people who would normally be embracing these, ideologies, so to speak. You know, when somebody who is a doctor, who is a medical, you know, whether it's Eben Alexander or Dr. Mary Neal, who's an orthopedic surgeon, these people, you know, having these near-death experiences where they're without oxygen for, you know, a half hour in Dr. Mary Neal's case. She knows she's a living miracle. So, you know, people can embrace a living miracle every once in a while. But, you know, if it's an MD, it seems to have this a little bit more street cred, if that makes sense, which is unfortunate. But I think that there's a movement here. Wouldn't you agree that more people coming out with these kinds of stories can help people sort of embrace that maybe there really is a God, that there is an afterlife, that there is something bigger going on here?
I agree with you completely, which is why I just wrote a book, which is being published, I think, in about 2 weeks, called "Where God and Medicine Meet."
Nice.
Where God and Medicine Meet, I wrote it with a doctor, Dr. Britt Cooper, a female doctor, a wonderful doctor from Canada, and she and I wrote the book together that talks about exactly that, the intersection between God and medicine.
Perfect. And Britt, B-R-I-T-T, is that how you spell her name?
B-R-I-T.
Okay, got it. My son is B-R-I-T-T, so when I hear you say Brit and not Brett, I got a little excited there.
Well, I think Brit is short for Brittany. I think she's Brittany Cooper.
Gotcha.
But she's used the name Brit professionally. She was one of the youngest students to graduate from medical school. She's still a very young woman. Mm-hmm. She's around 27 or 28. I think she graduated from medical school at the unlikely age of 26. Mm-hmm. That's after going to college for 4 years. She's a brilliant young woman. And she came to one of my retreats a few years ago, and she was so intrigued by what she was hearing about the whole God scenario, the cultural story around God, the new cultural story, that she said, you know, there must be an intersection. Could I interview you and we could talk about this? We discussed it on the phone for many, many hours. Finally, somebody said, for goodness sake, put a tape recorder on.
Yeah.
Listen to me, tape recorder.
Whatever. I know. I still say it, too. It's okay. And answering machine and stick shift car and blah, blah, blah. All right, go on.
But in any event, I agree with you. And so I think we're going to find there's another thing, by the way, not just a testimony of medical miracles and so forth. But consider this. This is going to sound way out now, but consider this. What kind of a story could be so compelling and so dramatic and wake humanity up so much as the stories of Muhammad and Christ and Moses and the Buddha did and all those incredible stories from years ago? I can tell you what story would stop humanity's heartbeat capture our attention immediately, and that would be proof of some communication. From entities not on the Earth.
Right. Another planet.
And I don't think that we're centuries away from that. I think that we're very close to the time when it won't any more be part of the popular UFOlogy thing where people think, well, yeah, the fringe of human race imagines they're seeing unidentified flying objects. But I in fact believe that we're just a short time away now, relatively speaking, just a number of years away from some direct communication or proof of it from intelligent species who are very benevolent and have only the best for humanity in mind, but who cannot interfere in a direct way with the process of our species evolution, but who can assist in the awakening of our species.
Right.
And in fact, I'm in the process right now as we're talking of writing a book entitled Awakening the Species.
It's interesting. So I recently had a conversation with Carolyn Mace, and she's talking about the global, it's like a galactic community of global leaders. And she says even the Pope is getting on board with this, that there is, you know, admission from many leaders in Canada that we are not alone. They're coming out and speaking about this, and this is no longer us and them. It is all of us, galaxies included. And that is the, you know, that is the thinking that's going to blow so many people's minds. But when more and more people have these, you know, experiences where they have a vision, or like for you, when you started getting the download of a whisper in your ear and the writing was flowing through you for conversations with God, you know, obviously enough people were fascinated by that for you to be on the bestseller list for, oh, I don't know, 135 weeks or something, but who's counting with just the first book. So we are hungry for it. You know, we're seeking, we're searching. And, you know, I wrote about this recently, Neil. I was running on the lake path in my hometown, and I had recently had lunch with a rabbi and a minister, and I wanted to have them all for my conversation series that I do in my community to talk about their beliefs on what happens when we die. And I wanted to include a spiritualist minister as well as a rabbi and somebody from the Christian faith, a Buddhist and a Muslim, and have them all there. And the rabbi refused to sit on the stage with a spiritualist. He just said, I absolutely don't believe in mediumship. I'm not going to sit on the stage because to me that condones the world of mediumship. And I got really upset by it as I was thinking about it more and more later. Somebody who claims to be teaching the word of God in his community and his synagogue, so judgmental, he won't even sit on the stage with somebody with different beliefs, right? And it's just like, here we are separating again. So I'm running on the lake path. I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking, how did we get here? And I saw a vision of what looked like a very dark-haired, blue-eyed man with a beard. And he said, I am Jesus, and I am here because they have messed up my message. I came to teach unconditional love. They are killing over my message. Love is the only way to God. Love is the water that puts out the fire of fear. Please tell everyone this message. Tell anyone who will listen. And then the vision disappeared, and I got goosebumps head to toe, and like tears were flowing out of my eyes, Neil. Like I can't even explain, like happy tears. And I got really rattled. And so when I went home and I thought about this, and I thought, well, you know, I thought about the words of, you know, Jesus and or dirty Jesus or the guy who needed a bath on the lake path that looked like Jesus. And it just thought, I thought, why me? And I thought about all the people, and you came to mind, Neil, like, well, why me? Why Neil? Why anybody who why the little kids in Spain who see the visions of Mary? Why a lady in Lombard who sees Jesus in her toast? You know, you just don't know why. But the important thing is to tell the story, speak the message. People can think you're crazy. I know I wasn't suffering from heat stroke. I really know it. It was only 70 degrees, so we can't blame dehydration.
Well, I think in my world, conversations with God answers that question, and it answers it very directly.
Yes.
It isn't you and me and that guy over there and a few of us.
Right.
In fact, God made it very clear. I talk to everyone all the time.
Yes.
The question is not to whom am I talking. The question is who's listening.
Yes.
The problem is not that God only speaks to a few people, or that these revelations from whatever source only come to a select group. The challenge is that we have a cultural story that suggests that it's blasphemy and anathema for us to even begin to suggest that we are, in fact, receiving inspirations from a higher source. That has been for centuries blasphemy and apostasy. So we're not allowed to suggest for a moment. So we have to that we're receiving direct inspiration from the source of greatest wisdom and understanding in the universe. We're not allowed to even suggest that. People who do are either put into a room with rubber walls and they give them crayons, but no sharp objects, or worse, they're put into jail. What we do, therefore, humanity, we find ways to mitigate the process. We call it something else. We simply call it serendipity or a stroke of luck.
Coincidence.
A coincidence, yes, or you know, a moment of inspiration. We call it, you know, whatever we can call it, a great idea, a brilliant idea. But we cannot call it, you know, a conversation with God, and we cannot call it direct revelation from the universe. So. But that's the cultural story is going to change. The cultural story around all of that is changing. In fact, I'm happy to say that the Conversations with God books has moved forward that whole cultural story. The books have sold in the millions. I'm not bragging about it, just noticing it. I had nothing to do with it, really. It's the process that took place by itself.
Yeah.
But the fact that millions of people around the world have read Conversations with God has thrown the door open and made everyone think, you know what, the books make it very clear. And every one of the books, not just one of them, they all say the same thing. I talk to everyone all the time. The question is not to whom am I talking. The question is, who's listening?
Yes. And we have the ability to have God's power and knowledge at all times because she source is always talking with us. And that is, again, not out there. It's in here. It's inside. If you have air in your lungs and a beat in your heart, you have everything you need. It's inside you. We keep reaching outside of ourselves for everything that we could possibly imagine. And Anita Morjani, another near-death experience who was in a coma with, you know, 27 tumors the size of lemons and, you know, up there hovering over her body and listening to all the thoughts of the doctors and the nurses. And she got this very clear vision that the more you reach outside of yourself, you're losing all your power. It's like your power cord just disconnects from the floor. I like to use the analogy of when you're vacuuming and you go one room too far and you think, I think I can get into the dining room. And then all of a sudden it goes, and you lose all power of the vacuum because you're reaching too far outside of yourself and thinking the answer is outside of you. And it's really inside all of us. I'm wondering, Neil, what you do every day when you start your day. So for our listeners, as they start their day tomorrow, or if you know they need a download or a reboot, what is your go-to reboot to get your day started?
Thank you, God, for another day and another chance to be my highest self. Thank you, God, for giving me the opportunity to actually be the source and no longer the seeker of that which improves the quality of life for all those whose experience I touch. I have come to the room to heal the room. I've come to the space to heal the space. There's no other reason for me to be here. I need nothing except the opportunity to make sure that no one else needs anything around me.
Perfect. Perfect. NeilDonaldWalsh.com is spelled N-E-A-L-E. Donald, W-A-L-S-C-H.com. Go there, get one of his 33 books, several films, not to mention the Conversation with God books, and I have God's message to the world in my hand, but the one that's coming out in 2 weeks, Neil, can you remind our listeners what that one is?
Where God and Medicine Meet.
Perfect. We will look for that as well, and maybe we can continue the conversation after that one comes out, and I'm sure I will inhale it within about 4 hours, and I will really look forward to connecting the dots with you on that book as well. Thank you to, you know, all of the things that you are bringing to this energy and into this world, and for paying it forward in an educational sense, and just the awareness that you're bringing into our consciousness. I'm so grateful. Thank you for this conversation, Neil. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to be here. I hope we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely, we will. Michael Heidemann for Keeping Everything Going. I'm Spiritual Dammit Podcast is here every week on WGN+. I'm Jennifer Weigel, and we will speak with you next time.